So what? So we're on to our
we're on to
our third track now.
Nice.
Which is the do you have the last page of the story? Because I know that's where I had some of my questions.
Yeah. I got it.
All right. So,
are we recording now?
Yeah. This is on.
Coming to you from a basement in Ann Arbor.
Hello and welcome to Words, the podcast where we talk about words and with the people who write them. I'm Phil Wittevine.
I'm Jack Bologna.
And this is The Beans. Today's February 1st. You're listening to the second episode of Words. We sit down with two sports journalists, a poet, and a fiction writer.
This week, the theme we found running through the works we talked about was competition.
Exciting. You always thought that there was a chance that they could lose nearly every single game this season. And that's a weirder type of a feeling, yeah. I think, to watching this season.
It's all about winning.
It was all about winning. She took no joy in it at all.
The Terminator is what she's kind of like. Kevin Spacey meets the Terminator,
pretty much.
And I think that one of the reasons when I am writing these poems, it's sort of like, nah, like, I'm, like, really pissed. And, like, I have a lot of, like, fists that I can, like, use through the language. Yeah. And so I think this is a poem where I'm just trying to, like, throw little punches.
This is an hour-long episode. Feel free to hit pause, press the download button, and listen at your leisure. And if you want to learn more about our contributors, go to our website at www.wordsapodcast.com. This first segment features Greg Garno and Alejandro Zuniga, who were the managing sports editors of the Michigan Daily last year. They covered one of the most dismal seasons in Michigan football history. That is, until we hired Jim Harbaugh. Let's listen to the interview.
Our guests today are
Greg Garno,
Alejandro Zuniga.
And guys, why don't you tell us just a little bit about yourselves?
We're both a couple of washed-up managing sports editors at the Michigan Daily, but last year we managed a sports section from the winter from January until December, and I looked after hockey, and we really covered hockey and football together, and now we're headed down different paths after this into journalism.
Yeah, congratulations by the way on that year, how does it feel to not be the editors anymore, to kind of pass that yoke on real quick?
Well, you get a lot more sleep. that's the first thing. It's a lot more relaxing. The two of us we've still been covering the whole Harbaugh situation, yeah. So we're still embedded in that way. But to take a step back and to look back at what all transpired this season, sometimes you just go, wow, I can't believe that all happened.
Yeah, for people that don't know, as the managing sports editors, that means that these guys were going to be typically in the Michigan Daily offices to probably like 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning most weekdays and Sunday nights. And anytime any news was breaking, they were there. If you guys have seen the Jim Harbaugh press conference.
How will you be able to sell this program?
Were you that young Michigan Daily reporter that was at the airport last night?
No, that was not me.
Where's that young man? That was you. Heck of a job. Heck of a job. Now, there's a... What's your name? Alejandro, stand up there, this guy. Now, there's a go-getter right there. That's a go-getter. Good job. Sorry about that.
Yeah, we ended up being the only people to track him down at his hotel, and the only people to talk to him that night when he arrived, so special.
Could you guys just please talk about covering what was some of the most depressing losses we've had in a long time?
Yeah, if you're a fan, it's difficult because the losses were tough, but I think that what goes underrated, at least, or under the radar, is how awful the wins were. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've watched games against Rutgers. Not Rutgers, excuse me, Northwestern. Rutgers was an awful loss in general. You got them mixed up now. But against Northwestern, where they won 10-9, and you know during that game there were so many turnovers and just quick three and outs, and even punting the ball back and forth. It was a really boring game. Nothing, no scoring, poor defense, and two surprisingly, and you just watched the way they won games, and it just wasn't exciting. You always thought that there was a chance that they could lose nearly every single game this season, and that's a weirder type of a feeling, I think, to watching this season.
Yeah, I think I fell asleep during that game, to be honest.
It was for your best. So we were at one point, we were looking up liquor stores close enough to Evanston, in the hopes that maybe we could skip out and find something better.
Wait, if you were thinking about liquor stores in Evanston, what about when you were in South Bend? I mean, was that like, yeah. Were you looking at like gun stores then?
Yeah. No.
Take it back to the Northwestern game. You're saying you fell asleep. Well, story from the press box, a guy sitting behind us in the press row also fell asleep and was snoring pretty loudly.
Really?
So,
yeah.
To add to the absurdity of that game.
So it was just a really tough season. I mean, we could tell you stats, and the stats would back it up just to say poor offense, defense was good, but poor offense, poor special teams, just couldn't do all that stuff. And that's just to say that it really wasn't a memorable season.
Mm-hmm. So maybe just for some context, what exactly was the win-loss ratio of Michigan football this year?
They finished 5-7. They finished, I believe, in fifth place in the Big Ten East.
Okay.
They didn't make a bowl game. They almost
somehow.
They did not make a bowl game. They were utterly depressing.
Devin was a great athlete. I would argue too. Then you didn't even start to get into the whole, schemes of what Ohio State's offense is and maybe why these other quarterbacks had better tools. Yeah, Devin Gardner was a really fast guy, really talented athlete. But maybe not the best quarterback, if that makes any sense. So then we start getting into that. But I think one of the things, too, and Alejandro will be the first to back this up, is that he was just a really nice guy. Mm-hmm. And you maybe not so much hated to see the season play out for him because of his talent, but just because he was so caring about the team and just because he was such a great guy to talk to, mm-hmm. that you didn't want to see a guy like that have to go out like that.
Did you guys have any good interview moments with him?
I think Greg was saying he was a good. I mean, he's a good guy. He'll give you an honest answer, which, in a group of players who will give you often just the blanket default. You know, we had a great week of practice where we failed in execution. It was refreshing sometimes, but it's absolutely true. You sometimes wonder, what if something had gone differently? Because Devin Gardner, he was one of the top-ranked dual-threat quarterbacks coming out of high school. Mm-hmm. We saw flashes of that his first time getting consistent time at quarterback a couple of years ago. But we just didn't see that over the last 2 years when he'd really taken on the starting role. And you wonder how much of that is mental. Like this year, you think he's in his senior season. He should be a lot better than he is. And you wonder how much of it is from playing behind one of the worst offensive lines I've ever seen last year, which was truly horrible. And how much does that shake your confidence? On the plus side, he is working out for the NFL draft as a wide receiver, which he played a couple of years ago. When Devin Gardner, when Denard Robinson was still here, and signs are he's doing pretty well. He's not gonna get drafted high, if at all, but. You might think, with the talent he has as an athlete, someone might take a chance on him.
I'm getting a lot of Brady Hill hate, and I can't speak from speaking from a point of ignorance.
Sorry, I'm loud. I don't like him. Sorry.
No, please. I mean, that's fine. I just, I guess I'm just curious when it comes to a season 5-7. How much of that is actually coming down on Brady Hill? How much autonomy does he have over that kind of? Situation is there a Brady Hoke that could have just turned the whole thing around, or was there just a lot of other factors at play? I guess that's
that's a fair question, and I'll tell you, based on what Brady Hoke tells us, it all comes down to him. Every single game he'll take responsibility, so then we would say every single loss would be on Brady Hoke by default, by what he would wish. So whether that's true or not, I don't know. There's a lot of factors too. Sometimes players simply just don't play the way they were instructed, or the other team is just better, and maybe that's the case. But if we're just strictly, I'm in a press conference, Brady Hoke says, I didn't coach these guys well enough. That's this loss is on me. Okay. Then just like he does every loss, I'm gonna put that on him. So that's why it's not that Brady Hoke should be hated on. I don't want to come across as being like.
Oh
that,
yeah,
so.
Yeah. I'm just curious.
Yeah.
And the thing to keep in mind is Brady Hoke. Probably loves this school more than anyone, and loves the football program more than anyone, which is why people were so excited when he was hired, because after Rich Rodriguez, he knew what Michigan was about. But when your last coaching hire was Brady Hoke, who's coming from a small school, and people maybe haven't heard of him, mm-hmm. and the person before that was Rich Rodriguez, who, while he was one of the hottest coaches on the market, then proceeded to... Mm-hmm. take the program to its worst stretch ever. To see that Michigan is still an elite program and can draw elite coaches is absolutely a sense of relief, because Brady Hoke, when he was hired by Michigan, he was not an elite coach. He was an up-and-coming coach, and Michigan proved to be too much for him. As for Jim Harbaugh, he has coached at the highest level, and he has done so very well. I do think there is a lot of pressure on him to do well, and people are saying national championship or bust next year, which just isn't feasible. At the same time, Jim Harbaugh is crazy in a very special way, and when, you know, there was a story this morning, he pours Gatorade into his cereal if he's run out of milk. That's just the kind of person he is. So whether that impacts him in any way, it probably doesn't. And any coach would say that, but I'd believe Jim Harbaugh more than just about anyone.
Yeah.
I think it has to weigh on him a little bit, though. I would think, though, if there's one guy that, you know, can shrug it off, it might be Jim Harbaugh. But yeah. I think that, you know, Michigan has a lot of fans and has a big fan base, and a lot of people want wins now, and they want to see this program back to what they grew up with. And so that's going to really kind of be held over his head in a few years if things don't get back together. Now, I would think if you're a sensible fan, if you're just anyone doesn't know a thing about Jim Harbaugh or sports, you would know, well, a guy gets into a job right away, let's not expect him to just, you know, be a star. Yeah. You're gonna need just a little bit of time. So you're gonna have to give him that time. But I think that, you know, Jim Harbaugh's leeway is still gonna be. We're still gonna see where that is, but very soon, depending on how long it takes him.
You guys are in the press box, you know, every week for Michigan football games during the season. And then you probably have to deal with just a lot of people all the time being like, hey, Greg, hey, Alejandro, you know what the problem is with Michigan football? And, like, you know, guys like me, essentially, you know, like, you know, sit and, like, watch from the sofa, you know, and then think, like, you know, I have a good understanding of the locker room. I mean, like, do you guys ever just want to be like, please, like, stop talking? Like, or
like every hour or every day or every week? What is this based on?
So it's that often, then?
Well, I don't want to... like use hyperbole, but I think that there are times, yeah, I mean, it's just annoying in general when anyone tries to tell you how to do your job, or, you know, that they, it's just a natural fact of life. I think now we're getting here a little bit more deeper than this, how deep this podcast wants to go, but just for someone to say, hey, let me tell you something about your job that you should know, because I, you know, as this random person can tell you, and yeah, it gets a little frustrating, but, you know, I think that's one of the things that, and again, Alejandro would, I'm sure, will echo this, is that when you're a journalist, you sign up for someone trying to tell you, a sports journalist at least, you know, that they a fan knows more, a fan has, you know, X opinion or belief or so on.
So do you ever regret having your email publicly listed on the Michigan Daily? And if so, like, what is, like, the best email, like, the best worst email you've ever got?
All right, I got an email this year in 11 parts that was... couple thousand words to each part.
No.
About the problems with the Michigan football team.
Someone wrote to you roughly like 2,000 words.
Oh, per I mean,
oh,
per chunk.
20,000 words.
Oh, absolutely.
Words.
Did you read those all?
I did not read them. Well, I got the first one and it was like, what's wrong with Michigan football? Or something like that. So I was like, all right, like, tempted me, I'll click. And I'm reading and all of a sudden I get like a ping on my phone, part two. So I'm like, okay. And then they just keep rolling in part three, four, five, and so on. And I didn't make it all the way through, but, I mean, it was a scathing review of Hoke and the players and Dave Brandon.
But directed to you.
But emailed toward me.
They were like, Alejandro, you need
to
know.
Yeah, so...
But do you think this person, like, sent this 11-part screed to anybody else? So they were just like, Alejandro, like, you were my guy. Like,
well, that'll happen sometimes with emailed people, too, is that, like, I'll get an email that I know was probably meant... for multiple people, maybe not at the same time, but they just try to get it out to as many media people as possible. But I can't believe someone who would even take the time to write, like, 10,000 words.
I guess, like, you know, I like to watch Michigan football and I like to talk about it, but at a certain point, it's a game, you know? And Greg, have you ever had any weird emails like that? Or?
I had someone ask me if I had children after a column I wrote. So, do you have, the title was, do you have children? And do you teach them the same things you write about, because if so, it's a damn shame or something like that. Yeah, I have it saved somewhere. You always save one or two of these that are just gold. That they chime in and say something. I think I maybe only had one person ever in my life, and sometimes it's rare to get an email in the first place, but it was just rare to get a person who said, "I read your column. I respectfully disagree with your points for some reasons, but I also could see where you might be coming from." And I thought, "You, sir, are a delight of a fan." Let's see. I think some of the fun things too are just how late or how what we do to stay up. I know we went out to Rutgers, so we left early in the morning. I picked up the car. We left early in the morning to get out there at night, and then we stay over at one of our fellow writers' parents' house, actually, of all places. I mean, we get to Jersey. We cover the games at night, so we're done writing probably about 11 something. Get in the car. We have to go from Piscataway, New Jersey, to Ann Arbor, Michigan. I'm not sure if you've ever calculated the hour drives, but I'll give you the short summary. It's close to like half a day.
Oh, yeah.
So we made that drive through the night, though, and that was incredibly brutal. And the thing was, we had to make that drive back through the night because Alejandro and I had to get back the next afternoon to put together the paper. That was something brutal. People don't realize sometimes too. We're not the only maybe student journalists more so, because we have less of a budget. But journalists all the time too are on. I'm sure when you were in student government, you're staying up late, you're on the move. So someone might be catching a flight back in time because they've got to get back to write another story, or we had to get back to put together something. So it's really time consuming, and then sometimes when you want to just take a nap and take a day off, it's really tough to do that. So.
Yeah. But I mean, at 4 o'clock in the morning with a van full of sports journalists, how do you guys stay awake? I mean.
Well,
how much Taylor Swift do you sing on an average road trip?
That's
a lot of Taylor Swift. if we're talking about the Piscataway road trip, one of us got food poisoning on the way back.
Really?
Ate an unfortunate gas station sandwich,
which was
not a good idea. I'm not naming any names.
We'll tell you after the show.
Okay,
but it wasn't either of us.
Okay.
We owe credit to our photographer, to the photographers that came with us. Photographers drove from like 3 to 5 in the morning.
Wow.
So that was, they took a brutal stretch. People trade off naps. So thankfully we had like 7 people in that van,
okay.
Which is also underrated in how awful that was, because that was a really cramped ride. So yeah.
But the
these are like first world problems too. We're talking about.
The best part of this job, at least as students, is that you get to spend a lot of time with people you might not otherwise. You get to go on trips and cover events that there's no way in hell you would otherwise. So, yeah. I mean, does it suck that we had to drive a day total to get to and from a really bad football game? I mean, yeah. But do I regret doing it? I mean, it was a lot of fun, and it's a moment. A weekend that I enjoyed ultimately, and once we got the smell of vomit out of the car, it was not too bad.
Okay. Yeah. Oh wow. Oh no, it didn't. Okay.
Yeah, it was a tough one.
Oh man. Wow. And after that, after the loss to Rutgers, you had to take it. Oh my God. So
that's not. You know that.
I want to create a time frame so like listeners can realize. I mean, like, so Michigan loses historically its first game at Rutgers in their first game in the Big Ten, in just a really depressing fashion. They rush the field. Then you guys have to drive 12 hours through the middle of the night so you can go home and make a paper about us losing. And during that trip, in like the middle of the night, there's like just vomit in the car.
Yeah,
that sounds about right.
But it was worth it.
Yeah, I mean,
that was a pause. That was a pause.
That you think about it, but. Was it always fun? No, but
the experience as a whole was worth it. I think that you remember the entire trip as a whole was like, yeah, that was fun. Was there them? It's really, yeah, that's a really tough question, Jack. It was really
put you on the spot. You're
yeah, no. I know. Tough in the sense that it's like, it does not sound fun. No, but was it worth it? Yes. How's that?
Well, maybe to pivot then. What was your favorite moment from the season?
My favorite moment.
When it ended? No, that's
a burn on Michigan football.
A lot of people probably aren't going to want to hear this, but one of the coolest moments for me was being on the field at the end of the Notre Dame game.
Yeah.
There's a reason 15, 20,000 students every year buy football tickets, and it's because football, Michigan football, is very special, and college football as a whole is very passionate. The fans are fantastic, and you know, there's a reason so many people love it.
So the Notre Dame fans were pretty cool then?
Yeah, end of the Notre Dame game, the game itself ended, and we were standing in the corner right by the Notre Dame student section, and all the Notre Dame players rushed over to there, locked their arms around each other, and start belting out the alma mater. Yeah. And we're just standing there, like, with 100,000 people, like, screaming and singing, like, right at us, with the players right there, and all the emotion. And, you know, you want to get a sense of what this is all about. Mm-hmm. You know, that was pretty awesome.
I just want to watch Rudy now, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah, that'll get you done.
What's the season, what's the prediction next year? Wins, loss?
Okay, so let's be clear on something before we ever give you a prediction. This year, Alejandro, you don't know the exact number of what you predicted, but in 12 games, what would you predict?
For this year?
Yeah, yeah.
Like the year that just ended?
Yes, yes.
I predicted them to only lose a couple games.
Was it a couple or one?
Two?
Was
a couple. I believe I said a couple.
You said they were going to go 10-2?
See, I'll give you my thought.
Wait. It's a yes or no question, Alejandro.
I'll at least give you my thought process behind it.
Okay, this is... But it was 10-2. I mean,
something along those lines.
Just nod your head. I can tell.
I am nodding over here. Don't worry.
Okay. It wasn't so much that I thought Michigan was amazing.
But it was a weak schedule.
It was a weak schedule. Mm-hmm. A lot of Michigan opponents had lost key players, including Notre Dame, who had four players suspended at the beginning of the year. Yeah. Ohio State had lost their Heisman Trophy caliber quarterback.
Yeah.
Michigan had a very promising schedule. I looked at Michigan's team. I thought, you know, this is the year they could finally put it together. They have a veteran quarterback. Mm-hmm. Their offensive line is going to be improved. Their defensive line is going to be very good.
Yeah.
Their defense as a whole should be very solid.
Yeah. We really did have a lot of... People forget about the amount of hope that we kind of had going in. Maybe not, you know, for something great, but just hope.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I would agree. I mean, I predicted only four losses, and only four. I wasn't alone. There are lots of other people, our writers too, predicted similar outcomes. It's just that I'm just giving you this caveat now, so that way when I go back and listen to this, I won't sound like as big an idiot as I might with a prediction.
In five words, describe Dave Brandon to you. Take five words. It doesn't have to be like a sentence. It just has to be, you know... Maybe it could be. Like mine, I would probably be like, I don't like him. No. That would be like... All right, Greg?
Five.
Don't miss your deadline, sir. He sent us we have totally skipped over, and for the length of this podcast and the viewer, probably a good thing. The whole incident about Shane Morris, the quarterback, getting a concussion, and then, you know, the handling of that concussion afterwards by Brady Hoke and the football team in general. And Dave Brandon, you know, we had been promised a statement on that concussion, and I said, oh yeah, we'll get it to you. And one of the things I remember were, you know, we had a story ready about to roll off with a page for our 1 a.m. deadline, and then we get an email at 12:42 in the morning?
12:52.
Oh, I'm sorry. I gave him 10-minute benefit of the doubt, and that was with some details about that. And so I've always said, don't miss your deadline. You know, I told my editor, don't, you know, myself at least, don't miss your deadline. And he was essentially, don't miss your deadline, Dave Brandon. So, not that he set one, I should say, but it was a brutal night.
Yeah, I bet. Alejandro, your five words.
All right, arrogant, money grabbing, wrong.
If money grabbing is hyphenated,
it's one.
Yeah.
All right. So arrogant, money grabbing, just plain wrong.
Oh wow.
So. Yeah. I'm not going to speak on Dave Brandon as a person, but as an athletic director, I think it was very clear that he was very set on his opinion of what his job was, which was to make money for the University of Michigan and the athletic department, which is not a bad goal, but the way that he did it was very clearly off base with what the Michigan community wanted.
The second segment features Carlina Duan, a poet from Ann Arbor. We sit down and talk about her poems, Here I Go Torching, I Wasn't Joking, and Amenorrhea. We discuss self-identifying, perception, and the menstrual cycle. Let's take a listen.
Here I go, torching. He came over, asked, "What are you?" I said it out loud. He said, "Oh, disappointed. I thought you were Malaysian." I turned small and wiped my ash mouth. His tasted like green onions, lampshades, light gone bad. He said, "Konnichiwa."
So you dumped this guy after then, right? Or
yeah, I mean, we were like casually seeing each other, okay, but I was so. Sort of like, "Bye, peace."
Yeah, you were like, "That's it." Yeah.
Again.
I feel like when he was like "Konnichiwa," you should be like "Konnichi no." I'm sorry.
Why are you saying
yeah,
this?
Konnichiwa. Yeah.
Then kissed me till I twanged, till the muscle in my face snapped. Freckles all over his arm, small brown rhymes. My body, bilingual threat. Muscle in my tongue, in each slice I speak. Black plane of hair, plane of mouth, of meat. He pushed up my shirt, ricochet, gunpowder teeth. He wanted neither of my tons, just gold hoops in my ears, metal in the tank, in the bed. I'm Chinese. See me and my pulled muscle. See him and his snapped trigger, our sputter and splash into the night. Glow of my own simple skin. Quietly, he stayed. I didn't speak.
This was based off a real-life thing that happened then?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is based off a true experience. Probably, I think it was last spring when I wrote this. Yasin mm-hmm. and I actually were in a creative writing class together, and this, I can't remember if I brought this in for a workshop, but this was during the time that I was in class. Mm-hmm. I had a creative writing class. Yeah, it was based off a true incident where, you know, I was basically kind of seeing this guy, and mm-hmm. And you know, and he was sort of just like, "What are you? Like, you know, what are you? Like, are you, you know, whatever? Are you Malaysian? Are you Thai? Are you whatever?" And I was like, "No, I'm Chinese American." And he just like his face fell, like it was like a noticeable like yeah, his face kind of like puffed and like deflated a little, deflated
like
a
in
little
disappointment.
Bit.
Like,
yeah,
really?
Yeah. Okay. And he was just like, "Oh, like, oh, okay." And started making like really weird, like not even jokes, but he was just kind of like making really weird commentary about, I think what he thought was about like Chinese-ness, but it was really like he said "Konnichiwa" to me, which is Japanese, yeah. Not Chinese, and I was just like, "Yo, like." Excuse
wow, this
me?
This is a
like,
very bizarre response.
The fuck?
That he, yeah.
So this is kind of a poem. I mean, it's in response to that, but also, honestly, it's in response to just, you know, being, I think, exoticized and also, like, over-sexualized at times as, like, an Asian American body, an Asian American mm-hmm. female body. Yeah. I mean, like, I've had moments where I, like, will walk down the street and people will be like, "Hey, like, you know, I, like, take out. Like, I like Chinese
really?
Food, you know?" And it's
wow.
like, alright, cool. Like, fuck what? You, bye. Like, yeah. And yeah, and so I think this is a poem that, I mean, obviously it's a pissy poem. Like, it's yeah. kind of, it's full of rage. And it's also full of, like, loss, I think, too, because...
But you don't kick him out, though. It says, "I didn't speak." I
yeah.
mean, like, is this, like, you, like, going back then and being like, "This is what I would have said."
Yeah.
If, like, I was, like...
I think, yeah, I think okay. a lot of my poems... So, I remember... talking to this Detroit poet named Francine Harris, who mm-hmm. is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. But in this conversation with her, she was kind of like, "Yeah, you know, one of the reasons why I write poetry is because I'm just not a good talker." Like, I...
The reason I love this poem so much is because of, like, the challenge to, like, exoticism in it, with it that goes along with this poem, and because it's something that, I mean, I'm not a Chinese American woman.
Wait,
but...
you're not? No, I'm sorry.
For all of you guys out there.
But... Stop sending me mail, no.
But as a Muslim, you know, like growing up with like a Muslim name and just having people who like mm-hmm. continuously ask me like if I'm from like Somalia or where am I from, like, because I can't possibly be from, like, you know, Southwest, South Central, Southeast Michigan. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, guys. And then they ask me, like, where my parents are from. Okay, my mother's from Cleveland. My dad's from D.C.
Yeah.
What are you trying to ask me? Like, so I totally get that. Like, that's what draws me, like, to this mm-hmm. like, so much. Because I just want to say something like that to people when they ask me that. But it's mm-hmm. like... My name is Yasin. I know it's Arabic. I know where I come from. I come from Pontiac, which is...
Yeah, right.
I always feel really bad, because, like, whenever, like, typically when I meet, like, Lebanese students or someone with, like, a Lebanese name, I'm like, where are you from? And, like, they're like, I'm from America. But I'm like, no, like, I'm from Dearborn. Like, are you from my hometown?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. They're like, oh, yeah. Like, yeah. And I'm like, awesome. Like, represent, you know? And, yeah.
I wasn't joking. I got a collarbone. I got an untidy mouth. I got a scalp where rain darts. Watch my palms chase through the head's black gully. In each armpit, I grow and grow the flossy hairs. In each armpit, I sweat, sprout.
I love the part about the armpits, you know? It's like, this is me, I have armpits, yeah. And I have armpit hair, you know?
I have so much armpit, I have
own
hair.
It, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah.
And one of the things that someone said to me recently was, like, you use hair a lot, like, you use, like, either, like, the hair on your head or just, like, body hair in general, like, mm-hmm. a lot in your poems, and, yeah. They were like, you always preface it with, like, black hair.
Yeah.
And I think that for me, like, a big part of the way that I see myself in the world is, like, through, like, just, like, black, being, like, a black-haired Chinese girl.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so I think that moment in the poem was, like, I mean, I think it was a lot about, this entire poem is a lot about claiming, I think, or just reclaiming a sense of, like, people, primarily, I think, men, but also just, like, people in general, telling me that I'm small oftentimes,
mm-hmm.
and me trying to, like, kind of, in a way, kind of reclaim that word small
and
make
be like,
myself
you think I'm
like,
small.
Size up, you
look
know?
At this armpit
yeah.
hair. You raise your arm.
Yeah,
we'll
exactly.
Compare,
exactly.
We'll...
Look at my fucking armpit hair. I got a yodel in me. Watch me flex precise. Watch the pinkest muscle. Won't give up my tongue for no one. How it slices and drums. In a dream, men told me I was small, and what did I know, woman with starry toes and knees. When they patted me on the head, I slashed the dirt, I slashed the gladiolas, nipples flowered like purple planets, all my hair chirped, I opened my mouth and let my 100 teeth show, saliva, gum, canines glinted, flashed the flash of rivers. When I bit my bottom lip, they said, oh, and I turned vicious. Girl, stroking the earth with two biceps. Let no one take my ton. I got a yodel in me. Won't back down without parting my lips. Wet and eager for the fight.
This poem just reminds me, as we were talking about before, how rappers kind of have, like, that one poem, or, I mean, that one song where they kind of say, like, you know, this is who you thought I am, this is who I actually am, and, like, mm. it's, like, I'm defining me on my own terms.
Yeah.
And, yeah, like, do you think this is, like, is this, like, your, like, number one track on, like, your, like the album you drop, you know?
Yeah, wow, that's really interesting. I mean, that's interesting that you bring it back to, I think, rap and hip-hop, because I've been trying to write a rap since, like, ninth grade, summer mm-hmm. after ninth grade.
Yeah.
I'm so interested in poetry, in like sort of the sonic rhythmic qualities mm-hmm. of poetry, and I love hip hop, and I just love it when people, I think hip hop is so smart and like it's so rich, like mm-hmm. it's so good. There's when hip hop is good, it's like so good.
Yeah, shout out to a tribe called Quest.
Shout out to everyone, really.
Words.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think that, so I've been really trying to, like, play with this idea of language
mm-hmm.
as collage, too, of mm-hmm. poetry as collage, and, like, weaving together, like, a lot of different images and a lot of different, I think, rhythms to kind of create one solid whole.
Yeah.
And I think this is a poem, especially, where I was really trying to do that, and... Kind of like I said before, I think this is sort of an anthem in a way,
think my favorite line in this poem about like reclaiming yourself is "Let my 100 teeth show," and I'm like, yes, help me. I know like we have at least
28, 32-ish. I have no idea. Do you have wisdom teeth? I got my wisdom teeth out, so I probably have less than you. But actually, you know,
so
that
you're 96 teeth. You have to be specific.
I just imagine like open up and like just like a shark's mouth, just like
wow, yeah. That's interesting. I mean that whole section. This poem is kind of mythic, I think, in a way for me. I think I've been writing a lot of poems recently where I evolve into kind of creatures, like. You know, I have one poem where I evolve into a rooster, which is my zodiac sign, which I think roosters are, like, complete badasses, and, like, just, like, with their beaks and, like, their, like, claws. Roosters really? Are
yeah.
powerful creatures, I think.
I have a story about roosters. So, like, when I was five, my sister locked me in a chicken coop after they had been throwing rocks at the rooster. And that rooster fucked me up.
Shout out to your senior sister.
Yes, no, I'm so happy that you were like here.
Alive?
Intact.
Yeah, I know, right?
Wait, why did she lie?
Yeah,
she
that's like... actually the cruel. Wow. So cruel.
It's the cruelest thing
ever. You were
shout
five
out
years
to
old.
Roosters.
So
for being
don't mess
vicious.
With roosters.
Yeah. But yeah, so I think like that whole section in terms of like 100 teeth and like saliva and rivers, that was really like me trying to like turn myself into like almost like a goddess in a way. Like that sounds incredibly self-righteous and like really cocky, but I do think that I am trying to like become like almost legendary in this poem. It's like, don't mess with me, don't call me cute, don't call me small, or do call me cute and do call me small, and like this is what I will become.
See what happens.
Yeah. Amenorrhea. That was the month when the heart made its earnest pelting and began to break the dishes in the sink one by one. The month when the car backed into the driveway with dim red light and Mom filed all the medical papers into plastic bins labeled with my name. I mispronounced the word gynecologist and stretched it tightly against my mouth. I haunted the high school bathrooms each morning with a cotton bag of pads, touched the dried drops of other girls' blood on toilet seats, color of roses and jam, the month when I shoved Pop-Tarts down my throat in calculus class and Adam said something about tapioca, how I didn't hear him. And we're like, everything started reminding me of like my period and like girlhood and like, you know, like even what Adam said in like calc class about like tapioca. I was like, period.
Wait, what's the I'm just out of curiosity. I mean, 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon style. How did you get from tapioca?
Yeah, a lot about like tapioca bubbles, like, you know, like the how they're like dark and kind of like almost plum colored and like kind of, this is like getting again really graphic, but and like they have that like wet like almost sticky substance to them. So jam and tapioca have always reminded me of my period.
Yeah. I have like 3 older sisters.
About tapioca,
still, like,
how I didn't hear him. Thought about thickness and clots, clouds of blood. In the middle of the month, I got my period, and the red on my panties sticky like pudding. I unpeeled the pad. I said, "Girl, I am a girl again. Thank God." After 7 months and the boxes of white pills, the dry underwear, the radiology department, the doctors touching up my abdomen. Does it hurt here? When I press, does it hurt? After all we carried into the waiting room, tea leaves and mints, sis, their thumbs in between my legs as if plowing for gold. I said, please, please, until suddenly I popped and the blood rushed in, wet, final prize.
I really love, like, the rushed in, because, like, it's actually, like, rushing out. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's like the feeling is rushing in.
Yeah.
So I really like that.
Yeah.
It's like, because it's like talking about both at the same time.
Right. Wow. Yeah. Thank you. I actually hadn't even thought about that. I think I was thinking more of like the relief rushed in, but you're right. I mean, it's like the blood like rushes out, but it's also like rushing.
Yeah.
It's the act of rushing in a way too.
Months when you didn't have your period.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, to get kind of graphic with it,
let's get into it, you know? Right. Like, this is, you
know, shout out to periods, shout out to womanhood. Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with being a woman.
Right. Yeah. No, there's everything right about... I love being a woman. There's everything great about being a woman. And I love my period. Shout out to my period. I'm actually on my period right now, so this is, like, phenomenal. Wow. Phenomenally fitting. So, yeah, basically, this is a poem about basically a period I had in high school where I did not get my period for 7 months. And I had to go through a bunch of tests at the radiology center at U of M over here. And then, you know, was seeing a gynecologist, was seeing, like, two different doctors at the same time, and was put on birth control and eventually did end up getting my period. And now, shout out to birth control, I have a period again.
Wow.
But for a stretch of time, it was pretty terrifying. Being, like, in high school, I think, especially,
yeah.
And just not having a period as, mm-hmm. I think, a female was, like, was absolutely, like, it was horrifying. Mm-hmm. You know, I knew that I was not pregnant because I was not having sex. but I honestly, it just felt like that there was something wrong with me.
Yeah.
And I think that this is a poem that's really about figuring out just, like, how to be a girl in a way, mm-hmm. and, like, figuring out what it means to, like, be girl and to, like, name myself girl and to want, and to, like, just, like, want to grow into that and, like, just, mm-hmm. you know, and, like, so it's a poem about, again, about
love. Especially at that time, like, in high school.
It's yeah. Gotta be, like, yeah. In the middle of, like, calculus and, like, also I was taking, like, health class at the same time.
Yeah.
Turmoil.
It's like you hear all these things, like, about, like, what's regular, what's supposed to be happening. You're like, it's not right. happening for me. Right.
No, yeah,
wow.
truly.
Yeah.
I literally remember, like, going to the bathroom stalls and, like, looking, like, just, like, wanting desperately to, like, see blood, like, on my underwear. And, wow. like, it, like, wasn't there. And for me, like, yeah, as, like, a young person who was, like, also, like, in high school and just learning about the world, but also, like, I think just, like, growing into my body, it was, like, I think it was really scary because it was something that is given to you. I mean, like, I had my period for a few times, and then it was just suddenly, like, gone.
Yeah.
Like, it had, like, disappeared. And I think the fear and, like, the loss of that was, like, really, like, heartbreaking for me, like, as, like, I think I was 16 or 17.
In our third segment, George Gardner joined us to talk about his short story. We discussed student government, wrestling, and the all too familiar but never talked about #sociopathdad. His story meditates in a more human space in between the realities of ruthless competition, in this case academic, and on a very small scale. Let's listen.
A soldier's rifle is his weapon, just as Amy's uniform is hers. Steel-toe boots for striped, knee-high socks. A conforming sleek crew cut is replaced by a tidy ponytail made to stand out. And boot camp, where the weak become strong, is dwarfed by middle school, where Amy aims to make her mark.
George Gardner's treasurer opens on a weekday morning breakfast scene. Amy is a seventh grader preparing to run for middle school treasurer.
Her life is a life of routine. She has no brothers or sisters or even real friends, except for her father, a lawyer who never loses and who never got a B in middle school. Her opponent is Guy Stevens, a popular jock.
The girls turn to see a lengthy boy with matted, dirty blonde hair. He's built it as if he could be the captain of a basketball or football team, point guard or quarterback.
And then there's Lindsay, perhaps the only morally upstanding character, who's running for class president.
I forgot to introduce myself. I'm Lindsay. Lindsay Talcott. Lindsay sticks out a hand to Amy.
The story is punctuated by conversations in the kitchen, where we learn about the nuanced relationship Amy has with her father, who encourages her to win, win, win at all costs.
The story depicts the descent of Amy, initially a likable character, into a cold-hearted competitor molded by her father.
Maybe the harshest consequence of Amy's pursuit is the death of her goldfish Herbert, whose tank Amy forgets to clean.
Will Amy win?
To see how this political drama ends, read the full story online at www.wordsapodcast.com.
I would like to know, what was the initial motivation for Amy seeking the position of treasurer? Because we don't get like that before, like when she makes the decision to. And it's, you know, her dad obviously pushes her later on. But what initially makes her want
to? Well, the idea with that was that every other position was filled.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't want to run. She wanted to win. She didn't want to have like...
She wanted to win.
Yeah, she wanted to win something. Mm-hmm. And Treasure was the only one that was no one was running. So mm-hmm. she was like, all right, I'm just going
to
take it.
But like, why does she want to run?
Because she wants to impress her dad.
Okay, so he's from the very start.
But she just wanted to win, like assuredly win. Mm-hmm. The main thing with that is she wanted to not lose.
Yeah, because losing is...
Because if she ran against like Lindsay, she probably would have lost, and mm-hmm. she wanted to at least win something.
I actually lost an election in junior high for like a similar position. I can't remember if it was like treasurer or secretary or something, but it was like a lower tier one. And I like lost, I think, I don't know, I'm just going to say it was close.
you got blew out. I'm just gonna say, I don't
know. Well, but then, so like, but I decided to run again in high school and I did become a representative. And then I learned like
that you do nothing.
I know. I quit. Like, I was like the student gov like rep, like the lady like hated me that ran it because I never did anything because we never did anything. We planned one dance.
Yeah, exactly.
It went swimmingly.
That's why there's a line in it that when she's questioning guy's capabilities of managing the funds mm-hmm. for the spring fling dance, because that's the most responsibility you get as treasurer.
Yeah. I guess my second big question, though, is we have the one segment about the mother, mm-hmm. Where you kind of get this explanation of why the dad is a single dad and has this relationship with his daughter. Mm-hmm. But are there any other points throughout the story that she thinks of her mom? Perhaps like later on in the story, like I thought that she might be thinking of her mom when she sees that one ballot that says, I thought we were friends. And like, maybe like she has this, you know, this question of like, is what I just did morally reprehensible?
Well, I think she definitely doesn't acknowledge that she doesn't know that her actions were morally reprehensible. Or if she does, she decides that winning is worth the moral repercussions.
Wow.
Because she still liked Lindsay mm-hmm. throughout the entire thing. Well, yeah, she still had a kind of a bond.
A friendship.
And she sacrificed that. And the whole bit was about, like, when she's with the... There's an echo between like the dad's advice about sacrifice, and you sacrifice things.
Even and so she sacrifices her friend,
and then she
and also Herbert the fish because Herbert dies.
Herbert unintentionally. Herbert totally could have been saved.
But it's a casualty. Your fault. That's a casualty. The writer.
Man, I haven't been juggling Herbert enough. I should just kill him.
It's totally Amy's fault. It's all Amy's fault.
So this girl's like a young Frank Underwood.
I love
something
it.
Like that. Right?
Yeah, well, kind of. I don't know. She's not as crazy as Kevin Spacey. When I got this workshop, like I got like three letters that were like, this is exactly like House of Cards. And I was like, that's weird because I've never seen House of Cards. So I guess it's cool, I guess.
House of Cards in the 7th grade.
Yeah. That's the note. That's been three notes. They were like, this is like House of Cards in the 7th grade. And I was like, not original at all.
So what inspired you to write this?
Well, I've always liked the idea of... Well, I saw this movie called Election, and it follows mm-hmm. a very similar plot. But the stories are very different. They diverge a lot. Because Election is all about how... It's a movie written by David Mamet, I believe. Uh-huh. And it's all about how, like... This character, played by Reese Witherspoon, mm-hmm. is so obsessed with winning this election that doesn't really matter. And it's all about how her choices kind of are...
Derailing,
focusing her to do that.
Yeah.
Well, and she's running against a jock who's very nice. He's, well, dumb, but he's very popular. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like someone in that sense. But for this one, I wanted to show the choice of, like... Because I wrestled for 6 years in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And granted, they're nothing like alike running in for treasure or wrestling.
Yeah, this is an interesting tack you're taking.
But but my dad was like crazy. So
shout out like, to George's dad.
Yeah, shout out dad. Fucking psycho. Oh
wow. Okay. Yeah, wait, like how is your dad really that crazy, number one?
He was crazy with wrestling. Like
are you and your dad on good terms right now? Or
yeah,
okay. Okay. So he's cool with you being like you're crazy dad. Like, all right.
It's pretty much just me, like, I'm just the old person, and he's, like, the young guy on the grass. I'm like, oh, get off my grass, you
wait,
kids.
You're like that?
Yeah, I'm just, that's what it is. I'm doing a fish shake. if you guys can't see it.
Okay. Boy, okay. You want to give like a shout out to like your dad, like right. You're cool, like I don't know, maybe.
Shout out, Dad.
You don't have to.
And you know, yeah, you don't. Okay.
All right, yeah, Dad. I'm
not but if you want,
you're
to.
Also crazy, Mr. Yeah. Gardner. I was only, as I've been told, I'm
Dad. I was only gonna do it for peer pressure, but so the yeah. Shout out's retracted. So.
On this episode, we're gonna try and get. Mr. Gardner is a psycho to trend on Twitter, right?
Hashtag.
Oh yeah, Mr. yeah. Gardner is a psycho. Oh, that could be our hashtag. But no, wait, hashtag
or something. Or
these insults are all under the guise that my dad will not listen to this. All
right.
Okay. Oh well, in that case, we might retract them.
Hashtag sociopath dads.
That's really appropriate.
That's appropriate.
Hashtag sociopath dads. Yeah.
All right, because I had a question about the
Well, wait. We'll get back to that, but
sorry. Just I'm not gonna do that again.
For completion of the wrestling sake, my dad wanted me to be like really good at wrestling, and mm-hmm. I was. Mm-hmm. But he made me do crazy shit. Like, I usually weigh 140.
Oh, you wrestled 140?
No, I wrestled 125.
Oh my god!
I weighed 120. Oh, wow. I weighed 146, and every year I have to lose fucking 20 pounds to wrestle, which is a crazy extent. And I never wanted to win. I wanted to not lose. Yeah. So all that motivation is in this story.
Wow.
Pretty much. And yeah, so I just chose it through the guise of an election because I like mm-hmm. the idea of people, of the election not really mattering, mm-hmm. but everything being invested. Let's go.
Did you ever have a goldfish?
I did not have a goldfish.
I did.
Did your dog die or did like...
My dog did die, but...
But not because you forgot to feed him, right?
No, because he was like 18.
Okay. That's good. I'm trying to make sure like your wrestling didn't cause.
Yeah,
you got too into your wrestling.
I didn't wrestle my dog to death. Okay, I wasn't like, "Whoa, my dog's in front of the practice room. I'm gonna have to wrestle him to get to the practice room." Something like that. No, it was just the crazy. I wanted to take the craziness of like my dad and just because wrestling doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter. Like
hashtag sociopath dads.
It doesn't matter, man. Yeah. Like now, it doesn't matter unless you're going like UFC or the Olympics, mm-hmm. which is like the top. 1% of the top 1% doesn't fucking matter. So mm-hmm. I wanted to take that into like the election thing.
All right.
And yeah.
Question you seen or you had that?
Yeah, you had something.
Which part? What thing?
I don't know. You started and I stopped. Like, you.
Lots of
questions. Yeah.
I know. Now, dude, that was.
Oh, the mother. Yeah, I had a question about the mother. Like, I know it's monumentally difficult for a mother to lose custody. Of a child?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a critique in workshop. Mm-hmm. But she gets Summers with her. That's the whole
thing. Did she move away? That's a thing. Like, if you're leaving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's because, like, yeah, that's pretty much what happened with my parents.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Because if you move away and the kid can decide to stay if she wants, which is what I did, just because, like, I didn't want to move.
Okay, so this is kind of biographical. This is pretty biographical.
Yeah, I guess, but I don't know. I think I definitely think those parts are easily the most boring part because I'm such a boring wife. I don't know. I like the scenes with Amy and the dad because it's just funny. I don't know.
Interesting. I really like the dad. Dude is like super psycho.
he was cold and calculating. Yeah. And he was always like stabbing his steak, and he was always like, or whatever he was eating at.
I tried not to make him super psycho, but like understandable.
You should have given him like a hobby like racquetball. You know, like that would have been like able to soften his edges. If you'd been like, you need to give this political speech. Anyways, honey, off to the racquetball court. You know, he would have come off as more cuddly.
Maybe.
I do like, though, how Amy remains likable throughout the story.
Because mm-hmm. She's just, like, she's just under so much pressure. Yeah. You can't help it.
And that's what makes the ending to me kind of so heartbreaking, is that I believe in, you know, in my heart of hearts, that Amy is a good person. She's, like, a good kid, you know? Mm-hmm. And then right she just, like, is. But, like, she's just, like, so mean at the end.
Yeah.
She's so okay with it.
That's what I really like about it, like, because it shows her changing.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is how these kids are made.
And I did not see this ending at all, really. I mean, I really thought that, like, there was going to be, like, Amy was going to learn a lesson about life. No. But, like, no, like.
She learned a lesson about life. Right. Yeah.
Well, I think Amy's different. Well, Amy and her dad are alike, but she doesn't take joy in what, like, unlike Guy, who, like, had mm-hmm. that moment where he's like, yeah, I'm really popular right now, like, mm-hmm. when he first goes on the podium, she just doesn't take joy in it. Like, she looked at Guy, but it wasn't like, oh, yeah, fuck you, Guy. It was like, are you going to drop out now? Are you going to drop out now? Like,
it's all about winning.
It was all about winning. She, robot, she took no joy in it at all.
The Terminator is what yeah. she's kind of like. Like, Kevin Spacey meets the Terminator.
Pretty much. She's not all out evil. Like,
you're right.
You said. Like, because she's still, like, everyone believes they're good. And this is just kind of a, this is a different, this is a different kind of goodness, yeah. I suppose. Yeah. What they believe is good is winning.
So wait, how, why didn't you write a story about a kid that wrestled?
Because I don't like when writers go like, why would you know? I like taking values that I like and then just throwing it into a setting that I'm completely, I have no idea about.
Hmm.
So then I could know more.
So it's kind of a mix. Like, so you want to like test out things.
Yeah.
That maybe.
Cause my life's fucking boring. Like,
I think did you see Foxcatcher?
I did see Foxcatcher.
Okay. Come on.
Yeah, that right? was really good.
Yeah. Oh, that reminds me.
There's
like one critique.
That movie. I could spoil that.
No, you better. Don't you do it. That's a current movie. But Usual Suspects is 15 years old.
Steve Crow's Kaiser.
Wait, hold on.
Steve Crow's Kaiser Sosa. And he's dead the entire time.
Alright, that's fine.
He's bad teeth.
But okay, yeah, one thing that I don't know. Anyway, there's a part where you're, you like reference like Rodney King.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I would just use a different reference.
Yeah, that was like a little bit tonally interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, it like I like it, it's like completely different. It like completely.
But it did
my head somewhere else.
But it did make me think like how kind of crazy the dad was, because he was like yellow skirts, Rodney King riots. You know, and like I was like, this guy is like.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's just kind of like a throwaway joke. It's not like a throwaway.
How often do you joke about
all the time? All the time.
Really?
What's up? It's Tuesday. Remember those Rodney King riots? Yeah. Hello.
No, I mean, I just wanted like, because just his way of, that's his way of dealing with injustice. It's just kind of joking.
Oh, like, so it shows like how, okay.
Plus I like the idea of him dropping these really specific historical references on his daughter, and his daughter getting it because she's like really smart.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because that's kind of the relationship.
Wow.
And it's just, like, the whole point is to make it the joke to the extreme.
Yeah.
So, that's just...
So, I guess it did.
Yeah, that's fine. I was just thinking, like, I would use, like, a different, like... Because the story is in a political realm. And that was a different kind of, like... That's a different... That's, like, a racial...
Yeah. Well, it's still in the realm of justice.
Not a political issue.
What's that? I mean, it is... It's a different realm of politics, though.
Well, I guess, what would be an event?
I mean, like, there's, like...
I thought, first of all, I had no problem with it. I kind of agree with, like, the historical specificity.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That does kind of add interest. And I don't know. Yeah, I think that maybe the context that you're thinking of it in could maybe be a little clearer, because it seems like that's not being read out of it. But otherwise, I mean, just in what it is, as it is, it seems fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine. I was just thinking that if you use something that was more, like, centered around, like, campaigning, like, you know, like, presidential campaigning, or like Watergate or
pardoning
something like that. Because I don't know.
Mm. Well, I don't know.
It's fine. I was just thinking, just I don't know.
I don't want every line of Dad's to focus on that. Like, because he has to have
any ambitions outside, you know.
Yeah.
One of his ambitions being,
because he's a lawyer. Like, for a big part of the thing, he's a lawyer.
Yeah.
Like, that's why he doesn't pick up Amy after school until so late, because he's
busy lawyering.
Lawyering at the firm.
He's a lawyer.
Yeah.
what kind of law does he practice, out of curiosity? I mean, does he just sue people and like, or
corporate lawyer?
Corporate lawyer. Yeah, defends like nuclear waste facilities.
Yeah, well, like. I thought like more like criminal justice kind of.
Oh, so he goes after the bad guys.
Well, I mean, I didn't really think about that because it, I don't know. I guess to be a successful lawyer at all, you kind of have to be like sociopathic in a sense.
Wow. Shout out to lawyers, right?
Yeah, shout out lawyers. Crazy people.
Hashtag psycho dad lawyers.
Since your job is not
psycho lawyer dad.
A lawyer might donate to this podcast, George.
Hey, don't get the hopes up, man. No, but what was it? No, because lawyers have to, even if they're defending someone who's, they know they're wrong, they have to forego that.
Well, everyone deserves a defense. That's a whole
issue. Yeah, exactly. But, like, I don't know. Like, in the Casey Anthony trial, like, the dude had crucial evidence that could have convicted her, and he just, like, you know, let's just let this baby murder off the streets. Let's do that.
We need more Casey Anthony jokes in this pod.
We really do. I don't know how I feel about it. Yeah, I think it needs a few more edits. But.
Okay.
Did you guys like it overall? Or?
Yeah, I mean...
We like it. I loved it.
Thanks for listening. Remember to tune in next week. Words is produced locally. None of the ingredients used in this podcast came from more than 2 miles away.
Actually, Greg and Alejandro live just 3 houses down from here.
We pledge that our podcast is 100% organic. Words is hosted by The Beans, Phil Wittevine, and Jack Bologna. Jack Bologna is the show's creator. Diane Thatch is our artist. And you are the listener. Now, the outtakes. You're good at beatboxing, man. I mean,
that was
I recorded that. That was, yeah, man.
I know.
And they had a real, they had, fuck. He's, god damn it.
This I don't know that in there.
It's going off script. It's really fucking, yeah, man, this girl is a potty mouth, man.
Yeah, I know.
I'm taking this moment to wrap up.
Always wanted to learn how to play the drums.
Really?
Yeah.
It's not. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. This is actually the practice space of Blunk 182.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Blunk 182.
Yeah. It's we're Ann Arbor's premier Blink 182 cover band. I'm serious. We just played. Yeah.
That's so good. Do an episode on this.
Yeah. Like it was. So we're good. Yeah. We're on Facebook. We have 210
totally
likes.
We're gonna go like you guys. You're about to have 210.
Yeah. We. I don't want to. We like kind of rocked it at Metal Fret. Yeah. But
yeah. That's,